Good evening, everyone. We'll get started with tonight's city council meeting. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith. Ms. Quiatek.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm. And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Councilwoman Wilhelm will not be joining us this evening. Councilwoman Ramsey Smith may just be running. Where's Councilwoman Ramsey Smith? Thank you. And then, before we continue, Mayor Reynolds may be a little late as he was tending to some World Heritage business this evening. Moving on to the approval of the minutes. Minutes from the May 21st, 2024 meeting. Any comments on the minutes from the council meeting? Minutes are approved then. Moving on to public comment. As is custom, we'll start with anything not being voted on this evening. We'll continue to have our 5-minute time limit. This evening we have 4 people signed up, so we'll go through them and then I will open it up to the entire room. Our first speaker signed up is Ms. Angela Mitchell. I ask everyone to give your name for the record, if you don't mind, for our city clerk.
Good evening, everyone. It's a great honor to be here one more time. And my name is Angela Mitchell and I reside at 430 Cherokee Street. And here I want to talk to, at first I want to thank you for helping me with the different issues that we were having in Indian Hill. And one of the things that is a pet peeve of mine is the trash. I want to know if we can do something with the recycling, because we pick up, the trash is being picked up every other week. And it's so much recycling, it's on the sidewalks. I do have pictures. And I was wondering if we can get some grant money to buy the bigger, larger size recycling bins for those people that don't have it on our block. Maybe starting a pilot project or something like that. Because it's getting horrendous all over again. And then garbage pickup. I wanted to know if we cannot do the single hauler, can we do something with that as well as buy proper sized garbage cans for those individuals that do not have lids on their cans and their garbage is spilling over? I walk through the neighborhood all the time. I live in the neighborhood and I'm just kind of concerned because when I come out my door on a hot day, I'm smelling garbage. And this was not happening before. I've been living at my place of residence since 2012. And just over, since it changed to the single hauler, it's just been quite much. So I'm trying to, I hope that we can do something about that. If there's any money that we can start in our neighborhood and go do one block at a time. The other thing that I'm concerned about, housing court. We have here more landlords here in the city of Bethlehem since I moved back here since 2010. And we don't have a housing court or a mediation court. So I was wondering if we can do something besides only having a magistrate where you file the complaint, because it's a process in trying to get something done. And it's not fair to the people if they complain about an issue in their apartments that they turned around, the landlord has the right to not renew their lease the next year. So a lot of more people are being evicted due to a market rate. And so I'm concerned about it, because then where does the commoners go if there's no place that they can afford to live in Bethlehem? Some places, one bedroom apartments are going $1,600, $1,700, $1,800, and it's a lot. And there's more homeless people than ever than before in the city of Bethlehem. And the other concern that I'm concerned with is enforcing the law. We have a code of ordinance here in the city of Bethlehem, and it's not being enforced, okay? So I'm concerned about having a housing court or mediation court so we, the tenants, can make our complaint. And the other concern that I'm concerned about is the kiosks, the parking meters all over the place. Even at Northampton Community College, they put a kiosk there. But being a individual that has handicap, you only have to put a nickel in there to get a whole hour, okay? So the minimum for a person to put in is a dollar, okay? So I'm concerned about that. What can be done to help the disabled people here? Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Our next speaker this evening is Mary Jo McCool.
Mary Jo McCool, 449 Grandview Boulevard. Two concerns tonight. First, I tried to use the My Bethlehem website to report an issue along both sides of Glendale Avenue from Grandview Boulevard to Poplar Lane. The sidewalk along the north side of this section of Glendale has a sidewalk completely blocked by overgrowth tree near Poplar Lane. The homeowner also never shovels this portion of her sidewalk when it snows. The home across Glendale also has a section overgrown. The weeds are high, and with the state predicting a bad summer for ticks, I would like the city to send someone to inspect this area. Informing residents to maintain this area would allow for the road to be two lanes as designed. The corner of Grandview Boulevard in Glendale is also a school bus stop. I tried utilizing the My Bethlehem app, but could not remember my password. Your website said repeatedly that they sent an email to reset my password. I never received it. I would rather utilize the website than trying to get through to someone by phone. My second concern is regarding this booklet. I appreciate the beneficial usage of my tax dollars, but I received my copy on May 10th. Spring arrived on March 19th. Summer begins June 20th. May 10th is more than halfway through spring. Tax information may have been outdated for some residents. Yard waste pickup was this morning for my area. Most residents had their spring yard cleanups completed long before this. There was also an article regarding the benefits to growing an urban forest. The article states trees are extremely beneficial to our world. Placing trees only along streets will provide some relief to our ailing climate. Planting groves of trees will do much more. Tree-lined streets are nice, but they can become hazard to visibility and safety of drivers and pedestrians. The street sweeping schedule states that streets under 12 feet wide do not get swept. The streets surrounding my neighborhood range from Bascom at 12 feet, Ritter at 15, Florence at 60, and Grandview Boulevard at 70 feet, all technically meet the sweeping dimensions. Why are they not included in the city schedule? The city is aware of the flooding issue along Grandview Boulevard and Ritter Street. Sweeping might help alleviate the problem. Any insight from the city would be welcome. While I understand signage is expensive, take a hint from Whitehall. They have temporary signs stapled to pickets and posted along streets announcing when sweeping will occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McCool. Next speaker, Artie Curtola.
Good Tony Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Southside, the ghetto. Yes, I own my ghetto home. I love it. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. But one thing, I've been coming here to these city council meetings before some of you were even born. I don't want to say exactly, I don't know my age. But however, thing is, you know, with all the times I checked upon where all the money's going, what we get from the grants that go to the city, what we get from ArtsQuest, nonprofit organization, what we get from Wing Creek and other nonprofit organizations and profit organizations like the Parking Authority, where is this money going? Why do we have all these homeless people? Why can't we go ahead and put them in houses that's heated? What's going on here? What's wrong with the picture? Too many homeless people. You give them tents that are unheated. You let them walk the streets so they get killed and die from different things. Now, come on, that's not humane at all. Let's do something for these people. So, anyway, ArtsQuest, nonprofit organization. Well, I've been barred from ArtsQuest for like over 7 years. I was probably the cleanest comic they ever had. I tried hard to not do anything, you know, like that was risque, but however, I did well. Held the crowd there at the Mankel Cinema. Nobody walked out, nobody booed me. But the guy running the whole thing, I won't give his name, wound up saying, I will never perform ArtsQuest again. Now this happened in the comedy section. How comes I'm barred from even playing a guitar, Ed Martin guitar, checking a guitar out when people start gathering around to hear me play guitar? But anyway, it is what it is. I'm going to be signed with the William Arts Agency this time next year, and I'll be on different TV shows. ArtsQuest will be paying top dollar if they want me. I don't care if they want me at all at this point. My two books are coming out. My one book, Malibu, which is an action-packed book about superheroes surfing and bikers and all this stuff, but the superheroes don't kill people. They turn them over to the authorities. And the right-hand man or woman, and no gender, I'm not talking the sexual type thing. Angels are non-sexual. Surf Angel, who's a messenger from God, is everywhere because God is everywhere and she's in the spirit of God, or he's in the spirit of God. That's what my one book's about. The other one is My Life Was Built on Miracles. It tells about all the miracles that happened in my life, going through a head-on collision, bounced off the other vehicle, landed on the asphalt highway with no broken bones, going through the glass window with cuts all over my face. Look close, there's no scars. Never had surgery. And another miracle is, well, miracle, I'm probably the only one that was thrown out of ArtsQuest for saying a comment that they said I'm a racist. But the miracle is, I perform Mexican restaurants all over the tri-state area, and this Saturday you can see me at the Mexico Lindo, 720 Main Street. Come on out, have some fun. My brother's coming all the way in from Texas to see me. I have other people coming in from Edison, New Jersey to be there. My party's gonna be a hoot too. I got that thing going on at the 540 Club. Now, really, it's closed. Sorry, I can't invite you. But the thing is, you can come to see me at other places. What else was I going to say? Boy, I'm at it now. It's got 56 seconds to go. With My Life Was Built on Miracles, with that book coming out, tells of all the miracles that happened in my life. And here I am, 100% disabled American veteran, with radiculopathy of the lower extremities, 2 herniated bulging discs in the lower lumbar region, 2 torn meniscuses, 2 torn patella problems, 2 torn cervical disc, all documented from over 15 years ago. And here I am, walking without a cane or a walker, not wearing any braces. And I don't even take any kind of medication, not even aspirin. I mean, aspirin, I'm sorry. Anyway, the thing is, it is what it is. 2 torn rotator cuffs. Look at that. Torn meniscuses. No pain. no pain medication.
Thank you, Mr. Curtis.
Supplements, natural supplements. Think of it for you and your family.
Thank you, Mr. Curtis.
God bless you.
Next speaker is Valerie Noonan.
Hello. So first off, I think we were all shocked at the last meeting to be informed that only 5 or 6 of the 19 water fountains in Bethlehem were functioning. And I'd just like to note, I can't think of a higher priority for my tax dollars than fixing this. Actually, just a few minutes before this meeting, my friend Quincy and I, we were out there. You know, you may have seen us, we give out soup, snacks, water, things like that, ahead of meetings and also weekly in Allentown. We talked to this gentleman who was probably unhoused, and you know, it's been hot out here. It's really hard on homeless people. And he said he had passed out from the heat the other day. And he said, when I made the comment to him about the water fountain, saying, oh, that's something that's been discussed at the council meetings, he said, well, I did find one that worked the other day, but it tasted like concrete. I wish I had been able to remember exactly where he said that was, but this is a serious issue, honestly. Like, you know, last time Ms. Kirksey-Smith correctly noted that this is a climate issue. We are having hotter summers every year. And in addition, like, how are we supposed to ever have a walkable city if people can't stop to get a drink of water? I don't see how that could ever happen. So that's a huge issue. I'd also like to note that at the last meeting, there was a commenter who suggested that the city council ban muscle shirts at meetings. And this information about the water fountains was brought to light by a commenter wearing a muscle shirt just a few minutes later. And I know which comment I found to be more valuable personally. Aside from that, today, I know we've all been disgusted and sickened by the information about the student resource officer who was abusing students and creating child sexual abuse material. I know we were all sickened by that. I have longer thoughts that honestly I'm not going to share today, but I'm just going to say my position on this is that you know, I'm not a huge fan of student resource officers in general. I grew up in the school shooting generation. I know, like, what the system is, how it has changed over the years, and I grew up with student resource officers in my schools, and I grew up with shooting threats and bomb threats in all of my schools, in my middle school, my high school, my university. And that's just what it's like to grow up going to school in America now. But what shocked me was to hear that at the press conference about the abuse allegations that an officer was allowed to be alone with a student, and despite what happened, it seemed that officials balked at committing to a rule against that, having an officer alone with a student. That is a real common sense rule. Not being alone with a child is a basic precaution taken in nearly every professional child care position. You know, I was held to a higher standard than that as a camp counselor, as a day camp counselor. So I just don't understand why that rule wouldn't be implemented at the very least. Those are the thoughts I have to speak on today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That exhausts the first list. I just want to clarify, Mr. Faber, did you you want to comment on something we're voting on tonight or something we're not voting on tonight?
So I have one for both, but my only, I didn't have one.
Well, I just...
Yeah, I was just going
to
ask
then you. Then I'll go around the room then. You don't need to explain it. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
But I am going to start over here. This is for anything not being voted on this evening. So did anyone want to make comment on anything we're not voting on this evening? Mr. Rodriguez, and then I'll work my way over.
Yeah.
Eddie Rodriguez, 13th Avenue, Bethlehem. When I mention these things, I don't want it to go against anybody, you know, because their comments are just as valuable as mine, and I don't want to compare. But when I hear something that's mentioned here, I go about the city and go specifically to those areas and see what I see. So when Mr. Cologne mentioned to me about a handball court, I went to 13th Avenue and you just got pictures which were sent over to the city clerk. And 13th Avenue is not suitable, neither is Yasko Park. I'll go one step at a time. 13th Avenue has a lot of grass, has concrete on the handball courts with glass that's stabilized on the walls. Fencing is worn out, broken, and so on. There's a huge tree branch there that needs to be cut down. And it's a dangerous site, really. Yasko Park was not suitable either because they have two big eyes that were drawn onto the handball court, actually, by an individual, two individuals, as a matter of fact. But the city of Bethlehem had something to do with that, which they allowed that to happen. I don't know how that happened, but they were involved because I sent you also a picture of that plaque that they have there on the right-hand side corner. If you would look at it, you'll see what I'm talking about because I took a close picture of it. Dirt bikes throughout the city, not just motorcycle, dirt bikes. We've been seeing a lot of dirt bikes all over this city, particularly on Linden Street and Seco Boulevard. And I would like to see what the police officers were doing, stopping individuals on Seco Boulevard. They should also do that throughout the city. There are illegal bikes, like I've been mentioning, since I've been coming to the council meetings. And these things should be stopped immediately. Because for several reasons, they're running through stop signs. They don't care, they just run through. They don't care who's crossing that street, whether it be pedestrian or anyone else that's slower, especially a senior citizen. They're running through traffic and against traffic. I've seen that on 3rd Avenue. The guy looked on a green dirt bike mask with all green, his clothing was green also, went against the stop sign, looked left and right and ran right through. He didn't care. He just ran it at super speed. And I've seen another incident where a dirt bike individual almost ran down a lady pedestrian. I almost went to that lady because I'm sure she was scared out of her boots. Running through red lights, they don't care, they just go. I want the police officers to really, really make stops immediately because this is going on too much. And as I don't think enough is being done, not just what happened on Stepco. When I went down with respect to the lady that's been talking about the Cherokee Street, I went down and I made comments the last meeting with reference to this. I saw large empty containers. I went through one end to the other except for the far end. But I went there slowly. I also talked with residents. I saw large containers and I saw recycling containers, but not what, with all due respect, has been spoken about. The containers, the recycling containers, are standard size issued by the recycling center. Green, and that's the normal size. I don't think you can get anything bigger. Upon request, they can be picked up and so on and so forth. That's been issued every year for the past few years. Some trees on Union Boulevard, West Union Boulevard, need to be cut down or taken down. They're rotted. They use, have a lot of large holes, Mike. Lots of large holes. There are also PPNL posts that need to be replaced. Double parking in the city has increased. Speeding down Linden Street and Stefco Boulevard has increased.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez.
And one more comment, if I may. 10 seconds.
I'll give you 10 seconds.
Yasco Park water fountain is working. I went there myself. And I tested it. It was cold water. I don't know about the rest.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Continuing on to the left. Mr. Faber.
Hello, I just, Harry Faber. I just want to preface and say that I support and encourage and appreciate anyone and everyone who comes up here, who speaks, who takes the time, who sacrifices that opportunity cost to be here and participate in local democracy. Whether I agree with you, disagree with you, you hate me, love me, I appreciate you and I encourage you to keep on coming. But I do want to point out a little hypocrisy. A couple people like to complain about the coalition and us coming here and complaining about U.S. taxpayer dollars being used on bombs, being dropped on refugee encampments like Rafah, and then they complain about us wasting our time, we can't do anything. But those same people come up here and spend 5 minutes playing a song, or come up here and complain about people giving out food to those who are hungry, who might have missed dinner to make it to these meetings, or complain about the attire of the people who are up here. And I just want to say, really look in the mirror, that itself is a waste of time, and that benefits nobody in the city, those complaints. Now, on to my next thing, I want to talk about the enforcement of law, and I think we need to point out how fines disproportionately affect poor people, whether it be speeding tickets, parking tickets. Fines are a tax on the poor. They disproportionately, and it's so simple, they disproportionately affect people with lower income. If somebody like me makes around $20 an hour, gets a $200 ticket, yeah, I'm screwed. That right there is 10 hours of my life gone. But let's say somebody makes $1,000 an hour. That's nothing. And that is a problem. Our legal system disproportionately affects poor people. I mean, look at Donald Trump. I'm not going to say I don't think Donald Trump belongs in jail or anything, but we live in a system where it is case by case. And they charged him with some stuff about, you know, we all know what happened. He got charged with 34 felonies. But Trump is a billionaire, so therefore he got to walk out of court and talk and give press and go on planes and do this and that. That's because he has a significant amount of money and he, therefore, is exempt from most rules that us normal citizens are bound to abide by. And I just want to point that out. And speaking on the heat, the climate, what's going on over in Gaza, over in Palestine, when will we take it personally? It's not happening here. I mean, climate change is, but when is it the point where you will take it personally? It is not happening here. But neither did the Holocaust happen here. And guess what? We took it personally. I mean, yeah, Japan bombed us, and we can go into that. But we acknowledge that in the Holocaust that it was horrible, it was a genocide, and we needed to step up and we needed to do something. When are we going to say enough is enough? I don't know if you guys seen since the last meeting, but a week ago, a little over a week ago, there was a Rafah massacre in which Israel dropped 2,000-pound bombs on a refugee encampment. And if you've seen the videos, which I've seen, and I'm sure a couple of my comrades here have also seen, I don't think you'd be making the same decisions you guys are making and being complacent. I really think you would be doing something or saying something or passing a resolution or trying to divest. And I get it. It's hard. I don't know. I don't have the time to really look into Bethlehem City's finances. I would love the time to figure out how we can divest personally from Israel and do our part to protect our sister city over in Palestine. But when are we going to take it personally? It might not be happening here. Bombs aren't dropping here. But they are dropping on people. What is empathy? Empathy is putting yourself in the place of other people. And guess what? That was horrible. That was horrible what happened last week. There were burning people coming out of these camps on fire, screaming, babies decapitated. I mean, like, when we talk about babies being decapitated and from Hamas and this and that, those claims are often unsubstantiated, completely, entirely fabricated. There are videos, live videos, of burning corpses of people screaming and dying and suffering, and they're posted and shown every day. Every day. And it's crazy. When are we going to say enough is enough? Really? Like, when is enough enough? Like, do the bombs have to drop here? Because I say that's too late. It's already too late. I want to see more. I want to do more. I didn't have a lot of time to prepare this week. I worked a lot. But please, please, let's do something. Something. I appreciate that the police do not arrest us when we demonstrate here in front of the council or in front of... And that's better than nothing. That's honestly better than probably what happens in Allentown or Easton. And I'll give you some credit. But Jesus Christ, enough is enough. I want more. It's not enough. We're not doing enough. We need to do more.
Everyone.
We need to do more. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Was there anyone else to the left who hasn't spoke yet who wanted to address council? Anyone in the center who hasn't spoke yet? Yes, in the very center.
Hiba Akbar.
Good evening.
It seems that much of the council and some of our constituents have had the chance to make their acquaintance, so allow me to make mine. My name is Hiba Akbar. I majored in biobehavioral health. I have worked in various clinics all across the Lehigh Valley and consider myself an active member of the community by night. I must say, after my first meeting 2 weeks ago, I'm genuinely impressed with the sheer welcomeness of the council and the open manner in which it hosts its public meetings, not to mention the diversity of backgrounds you each bring to the table. You may have noticed that Hiba is an Arab name. Yes, I am Muslim. Yes, I am deeply wounded by what is going on in Palestine. It's definitely important to me, but truth be told, I'm not here to talk about Palestine today. I'm here to talk about my country, the one I was born in, America. More specifically, the city I was raised in, the city of Bethlehem. I am interested to learn more about what I can do to actually help the council address real issues that plague our city. Issues like the fact that the majority of those in my age group find the reality of leaving their institution or college only to find that they have no idea what to do with their lives, not having access to affordable health care, or the fact that educated members of our senior community feel neglected in their civil issues, the rising tensions of making ends meet for fathers doing everything they can to provide for their family, mothers now having to juggle careers on top of raising their children, and, well, if you have a teenage daughter, that is an entirely different story. The point is, I understand these issues are deeply nuanced and systemic. As the former council president of Penn State University, I had the privilege of representing 20,000 students across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And while you could argue that student politics differ, I know from experience that council is not an enemy, but a cherished friend in our constituents' battle for justice. I'd like to remind the audience that we are stronger together. But my education in medicine and the sciences leads me to something I do feel I can make a difference in. Rising mental health issues after a devastating global pandemic are still on the rise. A community health assessment assisted by Dr. Bieber, the mayor's wife, actually, reported that 41.8% of Bethlehem residents report their mental health as not good in the past 30 days. This is higher than the United States' average and has significantly increased from 2019. People are depressed. They are not happy with their lives. They work 9-to-5 jobs they're not passionate about. Some are unemployed or work multiple jobs to stay afloat, having little to no time to exercise their hobbies or spend time with their loved ones. Even doctors that treat the patients with these issues are struggling in medical training to even remember why they exist. All I ask for is support, to be pointed in the right direction, information, Where's the rest of the research? I've read the community health assessments, case studies. I've talked to nurses, physicians, patients. Where are the statistics specifically for healthcare workers? Where are grants necessary to conduct clinical research? Who are the people in charge of health policy and what are they doing? Because I want to know. Because how am I supposed to heal people in healthcare if our healers need healing themselves? I want to end with one of my favorite mottos I came across on the poster of my favorite AP Spanish class in Liberty High School. When you speak in someone's second language, you are speaking to their brain. When you speak in someone's first language, you are speaking to their heart. Sure, I speak Spanish, the language of over 55% of most households in Bethlehem, by the way, but I'm referencing the nuance of bringing expertise only to find the majority of the population doesn't really understand research. I wish to uncover the nuances of what plagues our cities' health, particularly in their minds, and break it down in a way that resonates with our community. I hope to have your support and your guidance. And honestly, I'm very flattered that everyone's talking about Palestine, but I would be much more flattered if someone were to actually ask me what it's like to be a Muslim in America. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the Wide Center?
Terry Coyber, Granby Boulevard, Bethlehem. I wasn't going to say anything tonight because I really didn't have anything to say, but as I was listening on the way over to the gentleman talking about the dirt bikes running around, I sit out on my deck and Florence Avenue runs along the side of my house. What do I do? Who do I call? I'm really concerned because these bikes are running stop signs. The one rides around all the time with a girl on the back, no helmets, no lights, and they cut right across Florence Avenue. They go right across Grandview. They run the stop sign. I almost ran over a go-kart about a year or so ago. They were doing that back and forth across there. 3 seconds more, and I'd have gone right over them. But what do we do? I don't know. Do I call the police? I know you can't do anything, but how do we stop this? I'm concerned somebody's going to hit one of them one of these days. And yeah, the motorcycle guy is probably not going to be like maybe in too good of a shape, but what about the person who hits them, how they're going to feel for the rest of their lives seeing, you know, this kid in front of them down. It's just started up. It used to be the kid that lived catty corner to me, but they moved, but I'm pretty sure he's the one that's back on the blue bike with the ski hat with only his mouth or his eyes opened or uncovered. Now there's a blue and white one too, but like I said, they're either by themselves or they have a girl on the back with them, no helmets, and 9-10 o'clock at night they go flying by with no lights on. So it is a dangerous situation. I don't know what to do. I'm concerned because I see this happening while I'm sitting out there in the evenings. And I mean, I'd like to be able to do something, but I don't know what to do, so.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the Wide Center who wanted to make comment, who has not made comment yet? I turn to the right. All right, that exhausts our first public comment period. We'll move on to public comment for anything that's on the agenda tonight or into resolution. We have one person signed up. It's your favor.
Yeah, I just didn't have enough time to read the agenda, and I was going to ask if you guys could spend a little more time than normal.
Can you go to the microphone?
I mean, it's fine. I just wanted to ask if you could spend a little more time than normal going over it, because this week was an extremely busy week for me, and I just wanted to understand what was being deliberated on, and that's all.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Baker. So again, I'll go around the room. Was there anyone to the left who wants to make comment on anything that we're voting on this evening? Anyone in the Wide Center who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on? Mr. McCall?
Steven Antal, Silverson Ridge. The terms good, better, and best might best be called comparative terms denoting quality, with the term best called the superlative. It is reasonable that these terms be used in determining the best candidates who are appointed by the mayor and then voted on by council to serve as volunteers on various boards and commissions of the city of Bethlehem. This evening, council will be voting on an appointment to the Historic Architectural Review Board. Should not these qualitative terms apply? Do not the citizens of Bethlehem deserve the best? The names Rodman Young and Marsha Fritz are not known to me on a personal basis. The name Marsha Fritz is well known to me, as well as many here in this room, only because of her past service to the city. The continued overlooking of Mrs. Fritz's appointments to a historic position is of great concern to me. Should not council also reflect this concern? Should not the citizens of Bethlehem be served by its best people? And consequently, should not appointments reflect this awareness? The question for me becomes, why is Ms. Fritz not being appointed? And should not council be asking the same question? Should not the press also be asking the same questions if it wishes to report to its readers accurately? Council's action tonight will give a clear message to those who elected them to oversee the community's welfare. And the action taken tonight on this appointment will reflect just that. I would need quite a few fingers to count the number of council meetings I've attended over the years. And this is an aside to what I'm my basic comment. And what to me has been the fundamental principle of a republic form of government is the original town council, where people behind me and people from me who were elected interacted. That ceased to exist. And the people behind me are begging to go back to that, although they haven't experienced that, because they feel isolated and excluded. That's dangerous. Because it smacks in the face of good government and democracy. And having seen that deterioration makes me very sad.
Thank you, Mr. Antalix. All right. Is there anyone else in the wide center who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on tonight? Or anyone to the right who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on tonight? Thank you, everyone. We're going to continue on. Old business. Any old business for members of council? Any new business for members of council? Mr. Callahan?
I have two quick things, hopefully. I don't know if Mr. Evans or Ms. Collins wants to take this. So there was a neighborhood meeting scheduled for the First Presbyterian issue. That night is 2 weeks from tonight, and that is a night that we have a city councilman. I was asked by several of the residents to show up, and I said, yeah, sure, no problem. But then I checked the schedule, and we have a city council meeting that night. I think it's a very, very important issue to the residents that are out there who've been lining the big article in the paper. I think it's an important issue that I think I want to be there. I'm sure there's other people on council that would like to be there. So the only options I can think is either that meeting gets moved or we move city council to the following day, the 9th. Well, no, I don't want to do it the 19th. That's Juneteenth. let's say, so either move the neighborhood meeting or move city council to the 20th, which is Thursday, because I plan on being at the neighborhood meeting, whatever it is. So I don't want to, I can't be at both places. So if you just run it by the mayor and let us know, we do have time to publicly announce if we have to move either meeting. But I want to be at, and I was asked by some neighborhood members to, if I could show up at the meeting. And I told them that I would, so.
I wasn't personally involved in the scheduling, but my understanding is the church that is hosting the meeting provided a few dates, and like as between the organizers of the meeting itself, who invited new members of the city administration to speak and present on opening doors, childcare and vacations and other meetings. We looked at a lot of dates, and that was the one that was available. So, the group had invited the city to present, and so that was, we wanted to honor that, and so that's the date that we ended up going with.
Thank you. I don't ever recall moving a city council meeting, so I don't know if there's anybody that has the will or want to be at this meeting. I do. If we don't want to move it, which I totally understand. I mean, I like to be at both meetings, but I obviously can't. And if it comes down to a choice between the neighborhood meeting, which I think is a huge issue, obviously it's a big issue in the city, the big issue in the neighborhood. I'd like to be there instead of here. And if I have a choice, if I have to make a choice, I will be there. And I would let you know ahead of time, Mr. President. But I don't know if it's the will of council to move it to Thursday. I wouldn't like to do it on a Wednesday night. But I don't know what the will of, whatever everybody else decides is fine with me. So. And I think we do have time to advertise. I think we would have to advertise it right now. Okay.
May I reply, Mr. Kelly?
Yeah.
So I would say I am not in favor of changing the date of the city council meeting. It's talking about the, just so I'm understanding correctly, this is related to the First Presbyterian Church project, and there's going to be a presentation or a community meeting that the night of the next council meeting. Yeah. Am I understanding that correctly, right?
Well, I think also the neighbors are under the impression, and I don't know if this is correct or not, that it's about the opening doors policy too. I think that's part of the presentation.
I mean, the neighbors asked for a meeting with the city on the First Press and the opening door project.
So I would say, in terms of changing the whole city council schedule because of something going on in the community, not something I would commit to on the spot. I also understand we're on a tight crunch. I also understand Mr. Miller has to look at the availability of town hall. I also recognize there's certain, we advertise in the beginning of the year our meetings for the entire year, so we'd have to choose a date, I guess tonight, and then advertise for that. And I don't even know, I'm not going to speak confidently about what those timelines are, because I'm not sure, and I'll defer to Attorney Stewart in a second. But two other things I'll just say to wrap it up, Mr. Callahan, in terms of my perspective. One, as long as we have a quorum, we can conduct council business. Now, obviously, I can't predict what's going to be on the next council agenda. It might be routine items like we have tonight. It might be something a little more extraordinary. I don't know. If it is something that's extraordinary, that's not time sensitive, we could always look at putting it on a different agenda, with the recognition that people who might want to speak on it aren't at that next council meeting, you know what I mean, rather than have a split council. And then also, as it relates to any presentation that's going to be had, I know First Presbyterian has had other, in terms of their project or what they're proposing, I know they've had other community meetings. I don't know. I would assume they're going to have other ones in the future. And as it relates to city administration, I would say that we as a council could look at engaging city administration at any time in the future to hear whatever it is, if we're not there. I mean, the information is the information. Obviously, we wouldn't be able to, if you're not there, you're not going to hear what the
back and forth is, questions, comments, feedback, or presentation. But in terms of what is being presented, whether it's the opening doors policy or as it relates to First Presbyterian or anything like that, I think that information, there's potential just get it at another date, but I do understand, you know, where it comes from with that conflict. Like I said, on the spot, I would say I'm not in favor of moving the date. I think there's other things we can do. I totally understand.
I just thought if I didn't know if anybody else wanted to be there, and so I will formally let you know now that I won't be present at the next meeting. I will be at the opening doors presentation.
Understood. And I'll turn to Ms. Collins again because I think she had something else to add as it related to that.
I just wanted to add, we're not presenting on First Presbyterian's plan. It's their own plan, and any information about that project would have to.
Do you want to come to the microphone, please? Sure.
I just wanted to clarify in terms of the information being provided. We're not presenting on First Presbyterian's plan. That is their plan. They hold their own community meetings. They have held their own meetings. I think some of that information is on the website. I'm not sure. But we were asked to talk about the city's affordable, you know, housing, comprehensive housing plan, opening doors, and then answer questions from the neighbors. But the information that we would be presenting is quite honestly the same as we've presented at Community College and in many other venues that's available on the website, that is available by video. But I think listening to even some suggestions from council to go and see residents in their own neighborhood who maybe didn't get out to those other meetings, that's really the purpose of this meeting in our view, is to share the city's information, which, you know, many of you already have from other meetings. But we understand that, you know, the interest of that group is specifically related to First Pres, but that is still First Presbyterian's project, and we're not presenting on that or, you know, providing any additional information that you couldn't get from somewhere else.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you still have the floor, Councilman Callahan.
No, I thought we were done with everybody.
I also have concerns because I think that it's important, and I'm actually surprised and I guess I question why administration would schedule a meeting the same night as a council meeting, because I think it's important that council members have the opportunity to attend meetings such as this, especially when it is a community meeting and it is a topic that is very important to the community members. And while I know we have the opening doors report, and there have been meetings regarding it or presentations, I think that what the community members are looking for is more meat to, like, we have this, you know, the consultant recommends this, but what is the city going to do? What are they going to specifically put into action? And I feel strongly that, I know it's really difficult scheduling, but I feel strongly that the administration needs to reschedule it so council members can be present. Because I know it is very difficult to reschedule a council meeting. And while I understand all the parameters of this meeting, first of all, I don't think it should have been scheduled the night of a council meeting. I feel strongly regarding that. And secondly, I feel it should be rescheduled so we have the opportunity to be present. Because I'm met with many individuals in the community asking me questions, and if I can't be at that meeting to hear, you know, right from the horse's mouth, you know, no pun intended, but what the administration is saying, then I'm at a disadvantage when I have to respond to my constituents.
I think there are a couple more of us who have comments on this topic.
Understood. I'll start with Councilwoman Laird and move down to Councilman Miller.
So, I'm glad to see that there are so many more, so many conversations happening in the community about this project and that particular First Press project and the larger plan. I think that's great. I wanted to clarify, is the meeting, who is hosting the meeting?
The neighborhood group requested it.
Ms. Collins, again, I'm going to ask, just please, I'd like to
stay up here for a few minutes.
I appreciate it.
Just speak in the microphone.
Sure. The neighborhood group requested it, and we worked with them to decide what location it would be at, and then, you know, we worked with the church that is hosting it to find a date that works for everybody.
So it's a First Presbyterian hosted meeting?
No, sorry.
It's a city.
It's at the Wesleyan Church.
Oh, the Wesleyan.
So the neighborhood group requested it. The location of the meeting is the Wesleyan Church. So we worked with the church to find a date that worked for them.
I think they're called concerned citizens or something like that.
Concerned citizens, okay. That's, I was trying to figure out, like, wait, is this a city meeting that got scheduled for the same night as a city council meeting, or did an outside group schedule something on the same night as a city council meeting? I've been, you know, as you know, I've been interested in this topic and trying to attend where I can. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a pickle because it's not a city meeting to ask. But
I mean, we did. I will say, we did work on the scheduling on our end, and we selected a date that worked. That was within the time they asked for a meeting within a couple weeks or a month, and it's been a while now that we've been trying to schedule it. So I think rather than looking out into August or later.
Sure.
I think, unfortunately, this is the date that worked.
And is it at the same time as city council, or is it like?
I believe it does start at 7.
Councilwoman Leo? Yeah, it's 7 o'clock. Thank you.
Wow.
So, I guess I have gone to quite a few of the housing meetings and. So I feel like I'd have most of that information with the exception of the first prez component. Were there dates offered that were not Tuesdays at 7 o'clock? Like, did they have an array of dates to pick from?
The church that's hosting at Wesleyan, they provided dates. They have other programming. I think, they have regular scheduled meetings on Mondays for some organizations, and they have other regularly scheduled meetings. There were some non-Tuesday dates, but just between...
Not that coincided with... Everybody else's schedule.
Yeah.
Is there the ability to, like, I'm not saying provide a Zoom link and everybody can Zoom in, but is there the ability to record? Because I think council presence at any community meeting is a good thing. We obviously need quorum, so if one or two of us are going to go, then the rest of us need to stay. So has there been consideration given to, like, recording of that specific meeting that maybe council can review later? And I know it's not your meeting.
But I would think that that's a possibility.
Like, I would, just on my card, President Cohen, I'm out of town on the 19th through, like, the 25th, so rescheduling would be something that I would be in favor of, because I wouldn't be here either way, so I don't really have a dog in that fight, but it would just, I think, recording the meeting would be good for everybody who cannot go that day. If half of council does want to go, we still need to maintain quorum. At least recording the meeting would give us the opportunity to review it later.
I would want to double check with the group that they're comfortable with that and the church that they're comfortable with that, but if so, I would think that that's a possibility.
I don't know if this works, but what's the, I know during COVID we had meetings online that we could attend online. We had online meetings and we voted. So if any of us want to go, and I guess this is a question for the solicitor, if let's say one or two people want to be here, and then four or five wanted to be at the, could we attend the meeting online or through? Yeah, I mean, I know at some point, I wasn't in council at the time, that we stopped doing that after the COVID crisis.
To answer your question, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The rules that permitted all of council to participate virtually were repealed at kind of the end of the declaration of the end of the pandemic. And where it stands now is that you have to have an in-person quorum. And if you have an in-person quorum, other members can participate electronically. There's a caveat to that rule where, say you have an in-person quorum and then someone has to leave, then somebody on participating virtually can be part of the quorum. But essentially, you need bodies in the room.
You need four to start.
Yeah.
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 Attorney Stewart, can I also just ask you, in order to participate virtually, aren't there certain criteria, including participating virtually because of poor health or caring for someone in your household, being out of town on business?
There are very specific reasons to permit participation virtually, and this situation wouldn't fall into those parameters. So that is also an aspect of it. Preclude that possibility in this instance.
I would just say to Ms. Collins, and then sorry for interjecting, Mr. Callan, I'll turn the floor back over to you in a second, but Ms. Collins, just keep us informed.
Just from my perspective, if members of council choose to attend, as is everyone's right, like we talked about, if there's anything of grand substance or atypical on the next council agenda that council members want to talk to me about between now and then, let me know. Like I said, I don't know all that would be on the next agenda, other than might be nothing out of the ordinary, potentially, where we're not going to have anything. And then if there's potential to have the meeting recorded, let us know. I mean, I know that's not the city's doing, but as you collaborate with those that are coordinating this. So, but again, I'd restate, I'm not in favor of rescheduling a council meeting, but I understand
Members are doing this. Thank you. Did anybody else have any comments before I go to my second item?
One, whoever's directly in contact with the neighborhood group who is organizing it, if you could ask, because obviously there's plenty of us interested in the content, if they can and will record, just so you know we're sure that the question gets there from anybody, that would be appreciated.
I would just say again, I if it can be rescheduled, if at all possible, I think that would be the best scenario.
Thank you, Councilman. I will recognize Mayor Reynolds has joined us. And then, was there anything? Were you briefed on what we're talking about, Mayor Reynolds?
Mr. Evans just kind of caught me up a little bit on the conversation, so if I miss, but obviously about having to do with the June 18th meeting. I can just tell you that, you know, the majority of the meeting is going to be similar to what we have presented already, as far as what the origin of Opening Doors was, about different things going on in the population in Lehigh Valley. Mr. Tula is going to talk about some of what we're working on now as far as the priorities. And then, as we've said before, you know, obviously a lot of people there are, and then we're going to talk, and I'm going to talk kind of about like how zoning works, how zoning doesn't work, like what is included in zoning, like kind of get a little bit into the kind of the weeds there, which I've talked to some of the people in that group about. But I can tell you, and I think Ms. Collins had some comments in the paper, it's like the gist of our message is going to be is you have two groups of people, those involved with the church and those in the neighborhood, that are obviously in a high degree of conflict as far as what is going on there. And what we are going to say, and what I'm going to say, as far as the questions about that is concerned, is the idea that like we very much believe that the conversation between those two groups need to continue going into the future. As far as nobody wants to spend a lot of money in court, we've seen these things happen before, so we very much are encouraging both sides, as far as the church and then also a lot of the neighbors, to continue the conversations. And then the one thing we are going to talk about a little bit, if the question comes up and people want to talk about the plan, but one of the things that we are going to try to do is kind of redirect the conversation towards like the bigger conversation is about the zoning of the church. And because the plan is obviously an idea and it's a concept and they're talking about this now. But the real conversation, I think, as far as that particular property is concerned, is like what the future of the zoning looks like. Behind that church is you have the, whatever the, like a retirement residential complex is that Kirkland is. As far as like those other zoning districts that surround it, it is our opinion that we have just, and it's not, we think probably the best thing for them to do is both sides to continue out this conversation about zoning as far as some type of district. If you know anything about institutional zoning, which is what the church is, it's a rarity for churches. And around that church, you have a lot of different options of institutional, which is two cemeteries back at the golf course. So there's a real long-term zoning conversation that they have time to do, because based on what happened with, you know, what we had seen in the newspaper last week, that they weren't talking about doing anything for like a year or so. So just as like, and obviously we can report, we can do all of those different things that Mr. Evans told me about, but I'm just telling you, that's the gist. And obviously people ask questions and things like that, but that's going to be our message as it relates to that. Like, we are not the church, it's not our project, it is their project. Obviously they've talked about different concepts, they've gone through a process that they thought was the best process to go through, but just kind of a preview of what that conversation is going to be. It's going to be those type of kind of that kind of presentation. I'll probably start the meeting after some introductions by you know, the group. I don't know if it's somebody from the church or somebody from you know, the group will kind of start that, and then that's where we're going to kind of start with, is the idea that like obviously there's a lot of conflict going on, and that needs to be lowered, I think, for those groups to come together and have a real conversation, which I think they have time to do if there's nothing that's going to happen in the near future. So that's just kind of a preview of what that conversation is going to look like.
I don't think that I don't want to speak for him because it's obviously it's a large group. I don't know how large, but from what I'm hearing, it's over 350. But from what I'm being told, their main concern is the rezoning platform that's in the open doors policy of changing. And I'm not saying this is what you're doing. I'm not accusing anybody of this. But they do not want single-family neighborhoods rezoned to multifamily neighborhoods. And that's the one of the big issues I keep hearing.
Yeah, and it's obviously, Mr. Callahan, it's a conversation that we have consistently. We have consistently with people in that neighborhood, in those different groups, and that's kind of what I was going to say, like the non-first pres zoning part of the conversation is going to include how our zoning code works, the idea that in residential neighborhoods, we have a lot more control with setbacks, with height and things like that. We obviously are very sensitive about that. The research that it calls to do for in there, and you know, not to get too into it, but I think that this is part of what the conversation has been 2 weeks, so I think it's helpful to have this conversation. So if you ever looked at the zoning code, there's certain things that are allowed and not allowed in the individual districts. So in the four or five different residential ones, so for example, like in like RS or RR, which is like where Natalie and I live, which abuts this, you know, rural residential area on Center Street and surrounds the neighborhood, like currently, they're not allowed, you're not allowed to, if you had an open parcel of land, to even put like a half a double on. So any conversation, as you would see in any of these housing strategies, starts with this idea of how you necessarily look at land usage. But as we know, and as is mentioned many times throughout that, any conversation about development is like nobody wants somebody taking down buildings and putting up new buildings. Like I think we've been pretty clear about that. I think it mentions infill like 15 different times within opening doors. But that conversation would require some research to see about whether or not there's even any open land available. And this is all things that I've shared with different people. It's been a bit of frustrating for us that even though this conversation has happened many times in many different places, it hasn't necessarily gotten across to everybody, but that's okay. We're accessible, we'll keep having that conversation. So if you have a neighborhood that has 500 parcels and you have buildings or homes on 497 of them, like, it takes a lot of conversation to even investigate the idea of zoning for those three parcels that don't have anything on them because the amount of time and care, I mean, that's why you have things like the zoning hearing board. The zoning part of the opening doors, which we have said, we will continually say, and this is part of the reason we're going out there, and I'm going to have this conversation, kind of go through what it looks like, that you go from single-family homes, do you have, like, doubles, you have triples, you have apartment buildings, all these different types of things that we are not in favor of, that opening doors doesn't say. It says a lot about investigating for scale and form, things like that, is being able to look at this with the right amount of, like, what's the priority? And at the previous opening doors conversations, we've talked about how Ms. Heller, Ms. Collins, and Ms. Satullo are working on our Gateway and Fourth project. They're working on our Choice Neighborhoods project. They're working on the ADUs, which there are some zoning questions about that Ms. Heller and Ms. Satullo will be able to answer. But as far as like broad scale zoning changes, that's just not something, and I will continue to say it, and I will continue to say it to them. And one thing I found, to be completely honest, is when I get some of these people on the phone, they're like, oh, that makes complete sense. And other people are like, I don't believe that that's what you guys want to do. And I'm like, okay, all we can necessarily do is provide the information, explain how zoning works, how it doesn't work. Obviously, I think you know the level of sophistication in our zoning code, what we necessarily stand up for or against. I think you guys have that curative amendment next week that grew out of the fact that we have limitations as far as, you know, lengths and heights and things like that in our zoning districts. So that is something that we take very, very seriously. And I'm going to start the meeting by saying this is like what we hope are the takeaways after the meeting. And one of the things that Ms. Heller and I are going to talk about is how serious we take zoning. And the fact that we take zoning so seriously is why we have avoided some of the things that go on in other townships that have a very simplified zoning code of three or four or five districts is why they end up getting warehouses in these different places and things like that. So like that's gonna be that conversation. And like I said, we're gonna go and we're gonna talk about that, but that is not something that is currently on the table or that we are working on or researching or doing anything, which takes years, and we will have that conversation. What has got conflated though is obviously the situation that a lot of people in our neighborhood are very concerned about, which is the First Pres situation. And that's why we're going to provide information on the opening doors piece, on the zoning piece, and then we're going to answer questions about the process that they might go through as far as the city side. But you know, there's a clear delineation there between the one thing that we have been working on extensively and can answer a lot of questions on, and then the other thing that we're not going to answer a lot of questions on because it's not our project, other than, as the mayor, I'm saying, that I think the two groups have time to get together to talk about the future of what that parcel looks like, because zoning is permanent, as we know. So when you change the zoning, you are changing what all of the options are to be able to put on there based on what the zoning code allows.
Right.
So I think the zoning code should be coming first before they're necessarily talking about the plan from our point of view, which is just something that we are going to try to relay as far as what our opinion is. That's something that Ms. Collins had shared in the newspaper last week.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's something we can all discuss later on at that meeting. I think from what I'm understanding, their main concern is that there's something in that opening doors policy that would permit someone buying a big home, like over in the Manor neighborhood, and turning it from a single family home into a multi-family home, and that's their concern.
And I think it would be a misfounded and wrong concern, because that's both not the way zoning works, as you probably know as well. I, as the mayor, Ms. Heller, Ms. Collins, Mr. Spur, we don't vote on the changing of zoning. We don't. That's something city council decides. There is nothing probably in city government that moves slower or more, with more transparency than any individual conversations about zoning. I think we've all gone through the public hearings and things like that. So I would hope now that we have shared this information so much that people like yourself, when people bring that up, you could raise your hand and say, no, Mr. Reynolds talked about this at the last meeting. He explained about how zoning works. I know that what you may think or what you may have heard or you may have seen is the way things work, but that's not actually it works. And this is actually, and that's why I really appreciate these conversations, because it creates a group of people then that can be carriers of what the truth is, to be able to get to these people, to be able to get to people that may not understand how zoning works, to be able to point out like, no, that's not how it works. This is how it actually works.
I think what their thought process is, again, I'm not saying it is your process, is that your administration is pushing it, and they think there's enough votes on council eventually to do what's in that plan. And I think it's your administration, and you're going to do what you want to do, and I think you always try to do what's best for the city. I honestly think that. But I think if you see the number of signs out there, and it's not just there, it's in Edgeboro, they're all over, and there's a lot of different signs popping up, which I'm sure you're aware of. And I'm just telling you, their main concern is they want that part of the zoning taken out of the opening doors. And I think everything would go away at that point. And I don't know if that's possible or not.
But yeah, and what I would say is, and like I said, it is our neighborhood. And I say that's like, it is literally the neighborhood that Natalie and Leo and I live in. So when we're walking around and we're talking to people and we're having conversations about what is true and what is not true, like, it is certainly something that we are very aware and very comfortable with. Like, this is the way democracy works. I never would have wanted this job if I wasn't going to be able to answer questions and be transparent and be accessible. And I would have never asked the people behind me to stand with us if that wasn't the way that we look at doing this. We cannot be any clearer. What I can ask, though, is now that this is a situation that's talked about again, and we know the way zoning works and doesn't work, and it's nothing we can snap our fingers on, it's nothing that, city council can even decide we're going to do this tomorrow or whatever it might be, and I can't be any clearer. And if you look back at, as well, that we've talked about over my time in my 17 years here, like zoning text amendments are things that I take very, very seriously. But I would hope that once this information is shared and what is truthful, that process there, and if you went through, it is a menu of different options as far as for people to take on. It continues to be amazing to me that a group of people will take one small like line or two lines in a 100-page document and ignore everything else that provides the context and the perspective that it helps to explain what the priorities are that are in there. But like I said, I used to teach. I understand sometimes you need to talk about things over and over again. But I will say there's a real value in the people that understand this being able to turn around the next time you have phone calls or emails and be like, no, go back and listen to me and Mr. Reynolds' conversations the last city council meeting. Because, it's as clear and as transparent as it can be.
I think if those lines, those one or two lines you're referring to were taken out, I think they'd be at ease. it's something we can discuss later. I don't want you to know.
Just to move the conversation along, just to reiterate to anyone, follow along. That meeting is Tuesday, June the 8th.
2 weeks from today.
Yeah. That would be the 18th
right.
at 7 p.m. over at Wesley Methodist.
Yeah, West.
On
512 not First Pres at the church.
And I had that mixed up earlier.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're 14-1 and 14-2 Paulinus.
Understood. Mr. Callahan, we're still on new business to Florida.
I just have one other thing. So I know several people brought up the loud dirt bikes. I don't know. Mr. Mike, so I'm not trying to put you on a spot, and if you don't know the answer, it's no problem. I can wait. But do we have like a no chase policy, like with you know, the bike? I'm talking like the dirt bike situation where these kids are on these dirt bikes flying through the streets.
Well, any police chase tends to be dangerous, so each one is evaluated individually for whether it's police chasing somebody for what the violation is or not.
No, it doesn't. So if I mean we. We see them all the time. Everybody does. It's not just over in your neighborhood. You know, they're on Main Street. Yeah, and it's really something that I wanted to bring up later on down the road. But, you know, I mean, we had some really extensive long meetings, and this is one of the issues I wanted to address with the mayor. But if you're dining on Main Street, which there's a lot of businesses down there, and there's a lot of people, it's not the bike. It's not just the dirt bikes. It's the street bikes too that are coming through there, and you know, I have to say, they're just for no reason. I mean, revving the engine as loud as it can, and it's kind of like a canyon there, and just bouncing off all the way, and it's extremely loud, and it's inappropriate, you know. And sometimes there's cars coming up there, windows down, right, and their stereo system, whatever they got in there, is as loud as it could be, so. I don't know if we can have, like, I don't know if there's such thing as quiet zones. You know, I know in some cities they have those, but I know there's legal technicalities as far as, like, you know, the police department has to have, a decibel meter. It has to be calculated, you know, if it goes to court and all. So I just think there's got to be a little solution, not a complicated one, to help the downtown businesses who I've heard from on this. I've witnessed it myself, just as, you know, the neighbor. It's just not in your neighborhoods. It's all over. It's all over. It's a very hard thing to do, and I'm not sure we really want the police department chasing these kids on dirt bikes, because now there's a possibility of accidents and people getting injured. I mean, I totally get, I don't know what the solution is, but there's got to be a way, of, especially in our downtown area, in our dining areas where Main Street businesses need, you know, the summer money to survive for the year. And there's got to be a way to, I don't know, police it, control it, moderate it, something. I don't know. I don't know.
Some of it is information. So these riders aren't wearing masks a lot. The bikes don't have plates. But many reside in the city. So if residents know where the actors reside, I pass that information to the police department. We have leads to follow up with. And if they want to remain anonymous, they can get it through our tip line. Escape from me at the moment, but they can always call 865-7000 as well down to the service center and pass the information along to us.
Does the administration have any ideas on how we could help the situation as far as like the dirt bikes, the off-road dirt bikes, and the loud, you know, the loud? I mean, the revving of the engines. I mean, it's. Do we still have? I know we had the community policing with Mayor. Donchez, are we still doing that where the police are on their feet?
Yeah, I mean, I would defer to the deputy. I mean, this is a conversation that's come up before as far as, you know, using our bicycle cops and things like that to be able to get down there. But it is obviously the enforcement issue is a challenging one. But it's something that I think Chief Cott's got some ideas about. I would probably just defer to her for next meeting or whatever when she's back. Yeah. So she can, you know.
I'm not blaming anybody.
No, I don't think
I'm just trying to look up. Trying to come up with a solution for everybody, not only the neighbors, but the businesses and the people that are going downtown to, you know, have a quiet dinner on Main Street or abroad. And, you know, it's just, I mean, there's if you sit down there long enough, it's like a loop, you know, they do the loop and they want everybody to notice them.
Yeah, and dirt bikes can be a problem in a lot of neighborhoods, not just downtown.
Right.
So it's coming up with an overall policy. As far as, you know, where you see them. I mean, sometimes you see them on the greenway, sometimes you see them in different areas. So it really is a citywide focus on whatever that policy would be. But like I said, I think Chief Cott has some different potential ideas there. that I would probably defer to her and our traffic unit police officers to be able to bring the tape.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? Councilman Cranston.
I just had, I did speak to, or through email, Chief Reich and Mr. Alcall and Deputy Chief Mike, so, but I've had some the same person actually contacted me that they're concerned about fire hydrants and they're not painted yellow. So I just wanted to get clear. So are we not painting areas around the fire hydrants yellow at all anymore, like a no parking area? Okay, and since when? And is it a cost issue or a manpower issue? Can you explain why?
Thank you, Mr.
All that, but I think one of the main factors was that, like, in the wintertime, snow events, you can't see the yellow, it gets covered. So they moved to signage, where it was critical to enforce. Put up a sign, no parking from here over.
So are we putting signs in where every fire hydrant is? Because they're telling me they're not.
That's the method of delineation that has been chosen in the past. It doesn't exist everywhere it's supposed to right now.
Okay. Is it cost prohibitive, or is it something that we could look into?
It is obviously takes a lot of resources to do, mm-hmm. but a combination of factors that have put us in the situation that we're on. And there's also the competing interest of parking needs, on-street parking, all those factors is why we're where we are with this.
Okay. This particular person is concerned because she feels several people, or it's often that people are parking that area, and she's afraid of an accessibility issue if there, God forbid, is a fire, an emergency, and the fire folks cannot get to the hydrant. So, I mean, she's even willing to pay for the sign and put it up herself, and I said, no, that should not be necessary.
The chief, we spoke about it today, and the chief will provide a response and directions of what.
Right.
What
I mean, yeah, and I just wanted to look into it further because I know, you know, she can certainly call the non-emergency number. She seems to be parking there, but again, I know her and other people have repeatedly asked me this issue, and they're going to ask again. That's why I wanted to just get really clear on where our policy is. Do you foresee us looking at trying to get the signs up in areas in the future, or is it really just a cost, like a budgetary issue?
We can revisit that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And I would just add to that, Ms. Cramsey Smith, because it was something that they had shared with me today. Is one of the other things, like, look at the other side of it, just from like the enforcement issue. And this is one of those things that obviously you're balancing out all the different interests. Is that when you put up oftentimes it's not even the sign. It's, as Mr. Alcall kind of like alluded to, it's somebody that is parking and maybe they're like a foot past or they're 2 feet past. And we know that I think it's supposed to be 15 feet is what it is. But nobody obviously is going around with like a tape measure being like you're 13 feet, you're 14 feet. So it's one of those things that if it becomes, and if it is, then that's what it is. It's just it's a classic example that if you start to enforce that everywhere, you're going to end up with like a significant amount of tickets, probably, with people that are like, I was 6 inches in, or I was 12 inches in, or I was 2 feet in. Like, we do give out a lot of tickets if it looks like you're blocking it, or if you're down there and you're like 3 or 4 feet away. It just becomes like a lot of things, and I just want to put this out there before the conversation goes on too far, is it does become a potential, and it's not a reason not to do it, but just so we know, and it kind of goes back to my conversation with Mr. Callahan, is like that is a enforcement issue. I remember when I was in council, I'd get the emails like, well, I got this parking ticket, and I think I was probably 6 inches into the no parking zone closer to, we try to use some type of, I don't use it, but they try to use some type of common sense there. So it's just something to think about as far as like enforcement is concerned. But obviously the ones that are like the safety hazards and things like that, and we can absolutely look to see if at that particular intersection there's the no parking sign or not.
Yeah, thank you. I think because, like I said, this person is saying that it is very frequent. And I understand it is, you know, if it's somebody's blatantly parking there and it's up for interpretation, but, you know, overall we have to think about the safety too. God forbid if there is a fire that, you know, the fire trucks can't get in, so. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other new business from members of council? Councilwoman Laird?
So I was going to address Mr. Rodriguez, but I think he left. Just that it was mentioned that West Union Boulevard has a lot of trees that need work, and I live on West Union, and I know that in the last week, several of those were taken care of, and the city forester has been out talking to people about what can be done. So, if anybody sees him or he watches online, then that is underway. I also wanted to thank Public Works. I know I had reached out about the Spring Street neighborhood, like around 6th and Spring, and just all the work happening. It was like challenging to navigate. It appears to be almost done, and the road is like, it is awesome. It is very smooth. So that looks like it came together quite well. Ms. Akbar, I really appreciated you speaking and your concern for local health policy and initiatives. So I was hoping that somebody, you can talk to me after the meeting, or if somebody can connect her with the Health Bureau, maybe, because you were talking about who oversees our health policy, to be able to see what you can do as an engaged resident. Thanks.
Any other new business, Councilwoman Leo?
On that one, I just wanted to bring up, especially because we have so many people coming in that are interested in getting engaged in the city. Northside Alive and Southside Tomorrow are two programs that are run through the City and Community Action that you can get involved with. And we talk about water, we talk about housing, accessibility, and affordability. We've entertained conversations regarding Ms. Angela's idea for what we can do as a city or within our court system to allow for some kind of housing court thing. So if there is a desire to get involved in the city to learn more about policy, a really good start, that is, it's a like low barrier kind of thing. You don't have to know zoning or anything like that to get involved in Northside Alive and Southside Tomorrow, and it's a place where your voice can be heard and you can see real tangible change rather quickly. So just put that out there for our thousands of viewers online that want to get involved in the city.
Limiting it to thousands of viewers. Any other new business from members of council? Just briefly, I know it came up, and Chief Mike, so I'm not going to ask you to reaffirm my comment, but I would just remind everyone, it was asked what to do when you witness reckless driving in your neighborhoods. There's tens of thousands of residents with phones that far outnumber the number of police officers on duty at any given time. I'll speak from personal experience. We've had in my neighborhood off of Pennsylvania Avenue, someone who was driving, I'll just say recklessly, on a motorcycle with a toddler on the back seat. This was a couple summers ago. My wife and I called the department, a couple patrol vehicles came by and were able to stop the person at the time. Is that always the case? Gotta say no, it's just not practical in terms of enforcement, but I think it starts with awareness. So I have said before, and I always remind everyone, it's the old see something, say something. Don't hesitate to call the non-emergency number. Don't hesitate to call 911 if it is something urgent and you don't know the non-emergency number, because then a patrol officer will be dispatched out to the neighborhood, and that's where you have to at least start the process there, and then where it goes from there, kind of at the mercy of where the driver went and things like that. But information is always key, as Chief Mike alluded to, as it relates to enforcement, and it starts with just communicating to the department, especially if it's something that's chronic in terms of one particular vehicle or offender or something like that. I know there's conversation for other policies, as was discussed, as it relates to noise and things like that, but reckless driving is a law in the books. Going through stop signs is a law in the books. Things that put others in danger are laws that, while we're looking at other policies, we could try to communicate out when we see them, and that's what I would always suggest for anybody to do. I had one quick question, just following up on something else that came up during public comment, as it relates to the My Bethlehem app. I don't know if you could speak to it. If there are issues where it's malfunctioning or not, do we service that ourselves internally, or does that go through like a, I don't know much about how these applications work, does that go through a third party if it were, if the system was down, malfunctioning, whatever it would be, what would be the remedy there if someone's trying to submit something and there was not just potentially like a user error, but a true malfunction of the system?
It's a subscription, it's a third party that CClickFix is who we have been contracted with since 2019, runs the app, so we don't have many calls in that's not working. It seems to work pretty well. We do get a large number. Most is by phone, by far, to the service center. By phone, the second email, then the app is right up there with emails.
So, would just a call to the service, someone was experiencing some kind of potential malfunction, would a call to the service center be, I mean, that would at least initiate whatever the problem was?
Yeah, what was brought up was a password error, an email error. It sounded like to me that could be worked through in that form versus the software itself.
Sorry, just a very brief follow-up on that because I meant to address it. I had the same exact issue happen with that app, the email did not come through to spam. I work in IT, I did the troubleshooting that I could do with the app, and ended up texting Mayor Reynolds about a tree branch that was hanging from a wire because I was like, I can't do this right now. But it might be worth noting to whoever is in contact with that vendor that there does seem to be some issue getting the password reset emails through.
Okay. Any other new business before we move on?
It's on the same topic. So are they also responsible for the city website?
No, that's KSA and that's different.
A couple meetings ago, people had mentioned that they couldn't find the open doors policy. It was hard to find. Can we have them move that more prominent?
It's on the front page. If you had a chance to read it.
No, I didn't.
But it's on there.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other new business for Reference Council? We're going to continue on. Communications, 6A, Mr. Miller.
May 28th, 2024, memorandum with proposed resolution from Director of Public Director of Water and Sewer Resources, Edward Boscola. Mr. Boscola recommends a contract to Pannoni Associates Incorporated of Bethlehem, which will conduct a geophysics study of a section of East Market Street between North New and Center Streets to explore sinkholes that have occurred over the years, plus $10,000. The estimated completion date is August 31st, 2024. There are no renewals. This contractor provided the lowest of two bids received.
And Resolution 10A is on the agenda. 6B.
May 29th, 2024, memorandum and proposed resolution from DCED business manager Tiffany Wismer. Ms. Wismer recommends a contract with Forward Planning of Philadelphia to conduct a market study and strategy for the Steffco Pembroke neighborhood to evaluate the demand for affordable market rate rental and for sale housing. Costs $25,000, and the work is to be completed by December 31st, 2025. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda tonight. 6C.
May 29th, 2024, memorandum with an intergovernmental cooperation agreement and a proposed resolution from City Solicitor John S. Burke, Jr. Mr. Spurk recommends entering into an intermunicipal water service agreement between Lehigh County Authority, City of Allentown, Bethlehem Authority, and the City of Bethlehem. The agreement would permit design and construction of interconnects between the water systems in the event of emergencies arising from either water system.
And the resolution is on the agenda this evening. 6D.
May 28th, 2024, memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk, Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. Permittee is ArtsQuest, and the event is the 2024 Independence Day celebration. Event dates are noon until 11 p.m. on July 4th, 2024. Duration is noon until 11:30 p.m. on July 4th, 2024. Specified premises is First Street from Polk Street to the Eastern Terminus and Founders Way between First and Second Streets.
And Resolution 10D is on the agenda. 6E.
A May 28th, 2024 memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Burke, Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and a resolution. Permittee is ArtsQuest, and the event is the 2024 One Earth Reggae Fest. The event date is July 6, 2024, from 2 p.m. until midnight. Duration of the permit is from 10 a.m. on July 6 through 2 a.m. on July 7th. Specified premises is First Street from Polk Street to the Eastern Terminus and Founders Way between First and Second Streets.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda tonight. 6F.
May 29th, 2024, memorandum from City Solicitor John S. Burke, Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and a resolution. Permittee is ArtsQuest, and the event is 2024 Sacred Latin Festival. The event times are 6 p.m. until midnight on June 28th and 3 p.m. until midnight on June 29th. Duration is noon on June 28th until 1 a.m. on June 29th and 1 p.m. on June 29th until 1 a.m. on June 30th. Specified premises is First Street from Founders Way to the Eastern Terminus.
And Resolution 10F is on tonight's agenda. 6G.
May 29th, 2024 memorandum from City Solicitor John M. Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and a resolution. Permittee is Arts Quest and the event is the 2024 Copa de America Watch Party. The event times are 2 to 11 p.m. on June 23rd, 2024. Duration is noon until 11 p.m. on June 23rd. Specified premises is First Street from Founders Way to the Eastern Terminus.
Resolution 10G is on the agenda. Communication 6H.
May 29th, 2024 memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. Permittee is Christmas City Spirits LLC, and subpermittee is the Redevelopment Authority of the City of Bethlehem. The event is the Pride Party Palooza. Event times are 2 to 7 p.m. on June 23rd, 2024. Duration is noon to 8 p.m. on June 23rd. Specified premises are locations adjacent to the Sun Inn Courtyard as specified in the attached exhibit.
Resolution 10H is on the agenda. 6I.
May 23rd, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Vascola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a transfer of funds within the water capital budget. $420,000 would be transferred from account number 007A-771000, future capital needs, to account number 007A-77002, distribution system extensions, and account number 007A-77005, replace rehab distribution systems to replace a 100-year-old water main in Freemansburg and extend a water main in East Allen Township for new residential development.
10I is on tonight's agenda. 6J.
May 21st, 2024 memorandum with a proposed ordinance from Public Works Director Michael Alcall recommending an addition of funds to the non-utility capital budget. The adjustment reflects $377,857 received from UGI to reimburse the city for road overlay costs for work performed in 2022. Spending account number 69999-66058 will increase from $752,502 to $1,130,359, and non-utility capital revenue account number 006A-35001 UGI paving reimbursement will increase from $852,502 to $1,230,359. The adjustment will amend the total non-utility capital budget from $23,774,527 to $24,152,384.
And new ordinance 9B is on the agenda this evening. 6K.
May 29th, 2024 memorandum and attached proposed ordinance from Assistant City Solicitor Matthew Deschler. The ordinance would amend Article 347 of the city's codified ordinances to add to its scheduled fees a fee charged by Portnoy Law Associates for providing a guaranteed payoff amount as to any delinquent accounts. The fee would be charged to the person requesting the payoff amount, such as an individual seeking to purchase property and inquiring if there are associated fee delinquencies.
And new ordinance 9A is on the agenda. Last communication 6L.
May 29th, 2024 memorandum from Director of Community and Economic Development, Laura Collins, requesting that public hearings be set for June 18th, 2024. The first is on funding recommendations to council of $1,414,854 in community development block grant funds and $391,294 in home investment partnership program allocations for 2024. Second is to consider proposed substantial amendment reallocations of the CDBG/home funding to several new projects.
I'll accept a motion and then a second to schedule a public hearing for June 18, 2024 to consider the 2024 program year CDBG and home allocations and the proposed substantial amendment reallocations of CDBG and home funds to several of the new projects.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilwoman Kwiatek, second by Councilwoman Leon. Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Slater?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0 for that public hearing scheduled for June 18, 2024. Moving on to reports, I have nothing to report this evening. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. My first administrative order is I hereby reappoint Rodman Young, 72 East Market Street, Bethlehem, PA 1818, to the Board of Historical Architectural Review. This appointment is effective through March 2029.
Administrative Order 2024-25, Rodman Young, to the Board of Historical and Architectural Review. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Cologne.
Any discussion on the appointment?
I wish I had a general question about the appointments, and I was wondering if, like, we have term limits for authorities, boards, and commissions. Can people only serve for so long in one capacity to allow for new people to cycle in and out, or is it somebody can serve on an ABC for like 30 years?
So I will turn to Mayor Reynolds in one moment, but from my experience, not that I'm aware, I know there's term limits to the appointment. Mm-hmm. You serve for a set term, then be reappointed by the mayor at the time and reconfirmed by council, but not that I'm aware of with any of the different authorities, boards, and commissions. Mayor Reynolds, your input?
I don't believe so. Okay. And just to kind of get to that, I think at one of those previous meetings I talked about what our kind of appointment, reappointment, like kind of record was, and I think it was about 50-50 as far as like reappointing people or new appointments. So I think it was a combination of that.
It was just a general question. I know it's hard to get people to come out for ABCs in general, but I was just curious as to that. And as you said, this was a reappointment too.
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, and a lot of different qualities or characteristics go into how we decide to make appointments or not. And I can tell you that it doesn't come down to it's how much do people want to be a part of it, what specialties are they bringing to it, do we have, you know, sometimes different factors you think about, and some of these are geographic balance or professional balance as far as different backgrounds, with things like that. When new people want to be able to be a part of it, you know, we try to find the right spot for them. Sometimes, you know, there's not as many that are as interesting as people think they are, but some of them also have particular rules, and like HARG is one of them, as far as like how many different people you appoint here and there and things like that. I can tell you, though, that generally what happens with these particular appointments and whether or not somebody is reappointed or not is that they fit into one of the different categories, whether or not it's the Water Authority with Mr. Pascola or, you know, Ms. Heller, who works a lot with the HARB and the HCC. And the questions often are they coming to meetings? Are they engaged? Are they, you know, pleasant with the public? Are they, you know, all of these different things? And I will tell you that oftentimes, you know, and this, I just happen to say this about Mr. Young, is, you know, Mr. Young was, you know, someone that, you know, made negative comments about, you know, our conversation about the Walnut Street Garage. It didn't stop us from reappointing him to the board, because it's a dedicated person that wants to be a part of it. So, like, there's a lot of factors that go into this, but it's never personal as far as, like, reappointing people or not. It comes down to, is there somebody out there that has a level of expertise that they can bring to the table? Can they attend the meetings? Can they go above and beyond? And, you know, sometimes those people are on for a couple terms. Sometimes those people are on for one term. And some people are, you know, kind of there, but not exactly there. And then you talk to the professionals that are involved, and you say, we need more from our board members to be able to lead. So that's just kind of a background in what the process is that goes into it.
Just a procedural question too, like if people have questions about why someone is or is not appointed, if they were considered at all, is that a matter of record? Like, I would imagine that there are many cases where people wouldn't want their personal reasons for not being appointed or reappointed shared with the general public. And as volunteers, you know, I don't know how that works. So, if people have a question about why someone is or is not appointed or reappointed when they are considered, do they just go to that person? Do they go to the administration? Or do they just say, well, there must have been a reason?
Yeah, I would say that we are going to be very, very hesitant about telling other people other than that particular individual what the rationale was, as far as, and you know, the first thing that happens, and I've made these phone calls before to people, is like, thank you. Like, we really, even back when I was in city council, sometimes when we voted for somebody else to kind of take a position, I might call them and say, thank you for your service, thank you for your 10 years, thank you for your 12 years, thank you for your 13, 15 years, thank you for your 4 or 5 years. But it is not something, though, that they all are volunteers, and we thank all of our volunteers. So it's a situation that if you said, you know, Mayor, why didn't you, you know, reappoint this person? I'm going to give you the same answer I just kind of gave, is that there's often internal conversations about what skills people necessarily bring to the table. Oftentimes your board members need to be good at things that maybe the staff members aren't good at, and things like that. So there's a number of factors there, but we are never going to say publicly that, you know, somebody didn't deserve to be reappointed. We will, if we are deciding not to reappoint somebody, when at all possible, we will call them and have conversations. What often happens, though, too, you've probably seen this before, is like you fill people to fill the vacancy of somebody or a reappointment, because sometimes there's just the unfortunate reality, people just stop showing up to meetings, or they move, or there's a life change in their family or health situation going on. So it's not as easy as saying, like, hey, can we have a conversation? But it's like a citizen is wondering why. I would ask the person who we probably had a conversation with, because in general, they're all volunteers. We thank them for their service, and we're not going to probably go too much into what we believe were the skills that they do or do not take to the board, and like the seriousness that it has as far as millions of dollars or whatever it is.
Got it. Thank you.
Any other discussions? Mr. Callahan?
I would just say on that, I mean, generally, some of these boards are common sense and things that, you know, you can learn on the fly. I think some of them are a little bit more intricate, a little bit more complicated, like planning. There's a lot of stuff that goes into planning and zoning. I don't know what other, I'm trying to think off the top of my head what other boards are pretty complicated like that, but I mean, when Dr. Van Wert got appointed to the, what was the zoning, I thought that was a good new person to get on it, because she obviously has a lot of experience in planning and zoning. But I think generally, you know, those types of boards, we want to try to keep at least a few people on there that can keep the machine running, you know, that are experienced in those areas, because, you know, they're very complicated.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think in some areas that is absolutely true. One of the things that we've tried to do is, and we've been deliberate about this, is wait to find the right person that can bring something to that. So, of course, and some of them, like, for example, like, you know, the Water Authority Board or the Bethlehem Authority Board works very close with our, like, water and sewer staff. The Planning Commission works close with our Planning Bureau. There's other ones, though, like the Parking Authority, where it's not as much interaction with us. So when we appointed Mr. Sabrinsky, who's an engineer, who's very into, you know, smart urban planning and things like that as far as parking policy. So we are trying to think, Mr. Callahan, and I agree with you, that some of them require more kind of expertise in different areas than others, but we also think that there's a lot of opportunity sometimes to bring people on, to lift boards, to be able to get a kind of new role that we see that they could kind of fill interacting with their particular staff members that maybe hasn't always happened. So we're trying to, I agree with you, I guess what I'm saying is like, we're trying to lift all of them to that level of like sophistication to match kind of smart policy, yeah. Rather than which, and look, I think I voted for just about every single appointment that ever came to me as the mayor. But I think traditionally there have been times where it's just, good person wants to volunteer, let's put them on a board. Which in some areas, as you said, it's not a problem. But I and we personally think, like, if possible, you wait a little bit longer to find the right person that will bring that board what they need at that particular time.
Right.
Any other discussion from members of council? Mr. Miller, call the roll, please.
Ms. Leo?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Blum?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Just a couple quick updates. Last week, we unveiled the new mural along the Greenway, which once again was another successful partnership between our artistic community, Southside Arts District, the city, the school district. So I know that was something that a couple of us were there for, so thank you. We also raised the Pride flag last week. Thank you for everybody that was able to attend that. This Saturday, we are raising the Portuguese flag, Saturday at 10 a.m., and then on Sunday, the Juneteenth flag ceremony is at 3 p.m. And then just my last two updates are on Friday, we are, Chief Reich and I, going to over to the graduation of the Fire Academy in the morning, where I believe we will have seven firefighters graduating. That then will start work next week. So that will be extremely helpful as far as getting those numbers back. I think whatever number we have that is budgeted, like 106, due to a combination of retirements and these seven people in the academy and a couple, people that are working through kind of termination arbitrations, like we were down to like 85 or 86 that actually were like on the line showing up to work. So getting seven back on there is good, but we obviously are trying to get as many back to the academy as quickly as possible. And then also in the afternoon, then I will be with Chief Cott over at our police academy graduation, where I believe we have four new police officers that are graduating. And then they're showing up to work after that as well. So that'll be on Friday, you'll see that. And then I think next week, I forget if it's Tuesday or Wednesday, we're swearing in those firefighters to join right here in City Hall. And that completes my report, Mr. Gordon.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds. We don't have any ordinances for final passage tonight. Move on to new ordinance 9A, Mr. Miller, Bill 17, 2024.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 347 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, titled Municipal Claims for Delinquent Accounts, Schedule of Attorney's Fees to be added. Bill number 17, 2024, sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Colon.
Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 9B, Bill 18, 2024.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2024 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 18, 2024, is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Colon.
Any discussion?
I just want to say that I spoke to Lenny regarding this because basically she just explained it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Evans, basically it's just a transfer of unused funds from 2023 to allocate it for new projects because some projects came below budget, correct?
Yes, correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Moving on to resolutions 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Sononi Associates Incorporated to perform a geophysical exploration of portion of East Market Street. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Councilwoman Laird?
Is this related to the church and the street and the sinkholes and all that? Okay. And is this, obviously it's sparked by the situation that happened there. Is this part of an insurance investigation, or is this part of like just our due diligence? How is this coming about?
This is really part of our due diligence. This is focusing on the public right of way, sidewalks on the street, on Market between Center and New. Obviously, it's related to the various sinkholes and water main breaks and the event that happened at the church. The church is kind of taking care of their property, and the city's looking at public right of way. I understand the church has filed a claim against the city, and that all gets handled by insurance and legal factors. So, at
business part. This is part of our due diligence to make sure that the right-of-way is in good shape. And if there's any, if we find anything, then obviously we're going to, you know, make necessary repairs.
Thank you.
Any other discussion, Councilwoman?
I just wanted to ask, so will we not know until the study's done where we're at as far as the sinkhole and the street and the church and everything? I mean, is this study going to give us good definitive answers or not total definitive answers?
It will give us an idea of the condition of the subsurface of the public right-of-way, including the sidewalks and the street. The church, I think they did their own structural analysis and perhaps geotechnical evaluation of their property. Okay, so there's a delineation between what they're responsible for and then what we are responsible for on the public right of way.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Thank you, Mr. Boswell. Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passed 6-0. Resolution 10B.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor and hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Forward Planning to conduct a market study and strategy for the Stefco Pembroke neighborhood to evaluate demand for affordable market rate rental and for sale housing. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Colon.
Any discussion on the resolution? I'll start with Ms. Kwiatek.
I just wanted to know, are these funds coming from the Choice Neighborhood Grant or is this part of our match?
Combination.
It's a combination. So some from the grant and some of it represents part of the city's match for the grant.
It's a requirement as part of the Choice Neighborhoods Grant that this study is completed.
Thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
Could we have them also look at, I don't know if this is part this study or not, but look at some city properties that we currently own. It's not part of it.
It's got to be part of what's in the Choice Neighborhoods area, which is the Marvine Pembroke area.
All right, so I don't know if this qualifies as Marvine Pembroke, but I drive by, you know what I do for a living, right? Drive around all day. Mm-hmm. Bayard Park over there, and I don't ever want to take park space away from anybody, but Bayard Park over there, there's a huge area that's never, ever used. It's in back of the farmer's market on Stefco. Yeah. There's a playground to the far right. It's an odd-shaped park. The majority of the park is never used. It's just grass. The only area that is used is where the playground area. It's a big area. But there's a huge area to the left, Bayard Park, that's in the Pembroke area over there. I don't know how, it's probably about an acre or so, Mr. Apple, I think. We're in an affordable housing crisis. I don't ever want to take away park spaces being used, but if you look over there, it's never used. Just, that one particular area.
So, and I think that how land is utilized is included in here. Talking with Ms. Collins, like the Choice Neighborhood, like catch-all area, includes like that area up there, so I think that's already like included. I believe it's like everything that is west or east of Stefco Boulevard, and then like a little bit of the other side that surrounds like Lincoln. So I think like that is the catch area. I thought the question was, can we look at like all city property in other areas?
But when you brought up that area,
yeah,
that's the area.
But I believe that is included in that particular kind of mandated study that we have to do.
Just two questions. Do you have any idea on what percentage is the city has to pay or what percentage is a grant? You know, it's like 50-50 or 60-40. Do you have any idea what the city is paying for this?
Yeah, so there's the two accounts on there, so the larger of the...
Ms. Collins, again, if you'll mind showing up, sorry. Just to capture the answer, I appreciate it.
So for the market study specifically, the $20,000 is city match, the $5,000 is from the grant. For the entire grant overall, we received $500,000 from HUD, and then the City of Bethlehem's committed match from the beginning has been, I believe, $75,000, and the Bethlehem Housing Authority is $75,000. And we've split that among various projects. So we're taking most of the market study, for example. I think the Housing Authority is taking some specific studies that they have to do on their physical property. So that's, you know, part of their match is that specific project, for example.
And my other question is, with the opening doors of consultants, so that was a comprehensive study of the entire city, and there was a lot of data.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, did that not, not any of that data, like, relevant to this? Are we not repeating the same kind of study?
Yeah, it's extremely relevant. So if we hadn't done the opening doors plan, like, to do the type of study that we need to do for HUD that's required, it would probably be twice as much as what you're looking at now.
So the study, so just so I'm clear, so the study we have to do for this, we do not have any of that data through opening doors at all?
I'm saying we do have data that supports it, and because we have data, the cost is about half of what it would be otherwise.
So we're looking at further data that does not exist through this study, correct?
So we're utilizing data from the open and doors plan and work that was already done, and then we're building upon that to meet the requirements of HUD for the specific market study that's required by HUD for this grant. So yes, we are using some of the data, and we need some additional analysis and work specific to this neighborhood.
Okay. Because I'm just bottom line trying to be fiscally conservative. Like, do we need, if we already pay for a consultant and have the data, do we need to pay for another study to get further data? That's my question.
Yeah. So I'm saying we would have paid twice as much, and we're saving half the cost because we already did the work.
And this was a conversation that we had as well. It's like, we have all of this data. Does it necessarily meet what the federal requirements are for the utilization of the $500,000 now and the potentially $30 to $50 million implementation? And the answer was no. That gets us halfway there. But the good news that they told us was that we didn't need to spend twice as much as we're spending now because we spent the money already, which also helped us get the $500,000 in the first place.
So the bottom line is, we need to do this to get further data. We don't have all the data that we need. Correct?
Correct, and we need to do this because the federal government told us, City of Bethlehem, you need to do this, and you can't get all of this money if you don't do this study.
Thank you.
Any other comments from members of council? We'll call the roll. Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatkowski?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an intergovernmental cooperation agreement between Lehigh County Authority, City of Allentown, Bethlehem Authority, and the City of Bethlehem. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon.
Discussion on 10C. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Ms. Laird?
My thing. I would like to put forward a motion to consider the approved use permit agreements 10D through 10H as one item.
Second. So we have a motion on the floor from Councilwoman Laird, seconded by Councilman Callahan, to consider all the agenda's use permit agreements, which are agenda items 10D through 10H as a group. Any discussion on the motion? We'll call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Mr. Miller, please read agenda items 10D through 10H.
Resolutions 10D through 10H are all sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon. Resolution 10D, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with ArtsQuest for the 2024 Independence Day celebration. Resolution 10E, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with ArtsQuest for the 2024 One Earth Reggae Fest. Resolution 10F, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with ArtsQuest for the 2024 Sabre Latin Festival. Resolution 10G, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and/or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Arts Quest for the 2024 Copa de America Watch Party. And Resolution 10H, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the mayor and controller and/or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Christmas City Spirits LLC for the Pride Party Palooza.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Any discussion on the group of use permit agreements?
And this might be simple, but on 10H, it says the purpose for the June 23rd at Christmas City Spirits is the vintage market, but then on the 6H, what we're voting on, or no, I'm sorry, 10H we're voting on, it says Pride Party Palooza. I just want to make sure there's no problems with the semantics of two different titles legally. Because it looks like it's the same event, but it has two different titles. So 6H has Pride Party Palooza and 10H has Vintage Market. So I think 10H just needs to be changed, if I'm correct.
Here, Mike. Don't take it. It's under.
On our agenda is correct, but on the 10H user permit agreement, it's not.
Okay. And thank you, Councilman.
Right. I just don't know if that'll make a difference, Lee. I just want to make sure it's all covered.
I'll defer to Mr. Spurk, who office passes these through. Do you see any hiccups with the purpose?
I have no idea if Vintage Market is another name for the other thing or not.
It's a carryover from a different use permit.
It's a separate event. Yeah.
I think it was a typo internally. Just didn't delete.
Then I have no problem with amending it. That's fine. Cool.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you want to make a motion to
amend it? Can I make a motion to amend the Vintage Market to Pride Party Palooza on 10H?
So the motion on the floor is to amend line 4 from Vintage Market to Pride Party by Councilwoman Cram Smith, seconded by Councilwoman Laird. Any discussion? I'll just again thank Councilwoman for catching that.
I just don't want anything to interfere with this great event.
Mr. Miller, call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Motion passes 6-0. So Resolution 10H is now amended. Any other discussion on the group of use permit agreements? We'll call the roll on the group.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10-9.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that $420,000 within the water capital budget be transferred from the future capital needs account to the distribution system extensions and replacement / rehab distribution system accounts to fund a water main replacement in Freemansburg and extend a water main in East Allen Township. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Our last resolution, 10J.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 312 East 3rd Street to install a channel letter sign with the business logo and name. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. That concludes our agenda this evening. Everyone safe, everyone.